Welcome back, Miner fans. Thanks so much for listening once again, and welcome to this edition of the Picks Up Podcast, exploring the sports stories, issues, and personalities associated with UTEP athletics. Many of us carry on as sheltered at home, and my wish is that you and your family are healthy, getting along, and staying productive. An ongoing thanks to all of our healthcare professionals, first responders, and the many others on the front line. Their noble efforts are so significant and appreciated in these trying times. For those of us that count on sports as a meaningful part of our daily lives, last week's National Football League draft nicely filled a void during this period where there were none. As usual, quarterbacks were the focus, certainly at the top of the draft as the first pick, three of the top six, four in the first round, and 13 total were selected, along with numerous others that signed free agent deals following the draft. A distinguished record-setting ex-UTEP quarterback, he took the Miners to a pair of bowl games, then experienced a number of different situations as an NFL player, has much to do with getting many of these top signal callers prepared for what awaits them in the pro ranks. It's my pleasure to welcome number five in the orange and blue, Jordan Palmer, to this installment of the Picks Up Podcast. Jordan, it's always great to catch up with you. How and your family getting along in Southern California?
Well, that intro, all it does is strengthen my argument that, Tice, you're the best in the business, man. It just flows out so nice. I appreciate it. It is an interesting time, and like anything, there's still some time for work, and there's still a time to have a good time as well. And so just navigating my way through that.
Now, you and your wife Dottie have two young sons. How old are they? And tell us about your fatherhood experience to this point.
I'm all in. I thought at different times I was built to do something. At one time I thought that was to play quarterback. At certain times I thought that's to coach. But I'm all in on the dad thing. I think I'm built to do it, and I love it. And my wife and I went to high school together and kind of settled down in our hometown. And so I got a bunch of family around and back in Southern California. And so life's good. My little guys, one of them's four and the other one's a year and a half. And they're probably like any little brother combo. They, you know, hug each other and have a great time when we're looking, and beat each other up when we're not. And so we're in the same spot as I'm sure you were and a lot of other folks are, and enjoying it. And one of the cool things, though, is I do work with also a lot of middle school and high school quarterbacks. And so throughout the entire year, I have countless parents who follow me on Instagram or in person see my kids and stuff, and they all say the same things. Man, I remember when my little 18-year-old was that big, or my college student was that big. And so I'm just constantly reminded to be present and enjoy the times. And so that's what I'm doing.
Well, I've known you since you were 18 years old, which I guess is about half of your life. I don't know. Jordan Palmer, I remember. I didn't envision you as a father.
Oh, man. It's been super fun. I love coaching, and I do love football and the mechanics of it and how to throw and all that. But it's really like my calling has been the role I can play in some of these young guys' lives and helping them navigate their journey. And so fatherhood has been the ultimate opportunity to do that, and super challenging as well. I'm all in. I love it. I got great advice a while back when my oldest was really little from a friend who's a professional surfer. So pretty cool job. He surfs for a living, and his son, who's about 10 years older than my son, they just had this cool bond, and his son was pretty talented at his craft. And he told me if you, when they're little, if you pick a hobby that you haven't done since you were a kid, then every time you do that with them, you're going to feel like a kid and have a great time. And so for me, that was skateboarding. I hadn't skateboarded since I was in like eighth grade. And about 4 years ago, I started skateboarding and pushing my son in the stroller a little bit. And then as I got more comfortable the board changed, and then the little thing that I pushed around got a little bit faster and more aerodynamic. And then now I'm like pulling him around in a wagon with an electric ski board and different board for going downhill. So I just have a blast every day. I found a couple of things that I love to do, but I haven't done them since I was a kid. And so that has been the best advice for me. And just the other day, just kind of picking up my guitar and starting that thing. So I think that's been one of the keys, is just finding little things that we can connect on besides just, you know, use your manners and finish your dinner. That's been really, really fun. It's almost just been like an unlock for me. And as I've shared that with a lot of my buddies and gone on a lot of like fatherhood podcasts, I've heard some cool stories about that having the same effect on a lot of people.
You know, trust me, you'll keep learning as fatherhood goes along. All right, let's dig in a little bit. The NFL draft took place this past weekend. Joe Burrow, whom you've worked with, was the top choice by the Cincinnati Bengals. What did it mean to you to have one that you've mentored go number one overall?
Well, it was really cool. I think it was, I have not trained anybody who had gone number one. I had not trained a Heisman winner either. And had guys go, you know, really high and all that. And I had worked with guys who had won national championships. So Joe was new in some regards. But honestly, it's one of those deals where it was pretty anticlimactic because we kind of knew that that's what was going to happen heading into it. And so it was really similar to when my brother was the number one pick, ironically by the same team, because we kind of showed up that year to the green room with Bengals hats on. We essentially knew. But honestly, any of the things that I get to be a part of, so, you know, helping a dude who has done those things, right? Won a championship, been gone number one or Heisman, even if it's just individually, all it does is allow me to learn. And I'm helping him in areas, but learn, what that person's going through, and, you know, whether it's having conversations, helping him kind of think through how to write the speech for the Heisman that week, or, you know, when he's leaving for the, you know, for the draft, going through that process, or the conversations that we had leading up to the championship. That experience for me, it is cool and it does feel awesome. And I'd love being a part of really big, important things like that. But it also just puts me in a position to further help the next guys that are in that position. Does that make sense?
Sure, sure, absolutely. You know, you've talked about being a very small part of the equation for some that you've worked with, a much bigger piece for others. Which end of the scale did Burrow fall on?
Well, I think it's, what you're referencing is sometimes I really ride with guys their whole career, or starting when I first met them. And so there's the Jarrett Stidhams and Sam Darnolds where we met in high school, and I'm just going to probably end up helping them all the way through. And then there's been guys where I just trained them for the draft, and that was great, and stay in touch with them and, you know, part of each other's lives. But that was the time and, you know, when I could be most helpful. And so I don't know where Joe stands, but I had met him a little over a year ago, and kind of coming out of the season before, and I had watched the 2018 season. I know Coach Orgeron, and kind of knew the story of what happened there. And most people didn't realize that in 2018, LSU's receivers led all of college football and dropped passes. And so Joe was very under the radar, other than people in Louisiana. You know, he was not a national name. Nobody was really expecting anything from him. But that was really this run that they went on was really brewing. And you can tell now they had, what I think, 13 guys drafted or something like that, tying a record. They had 18 go to the combine. That was tied for a record. So this was not just the Joe Burrow show, right? There's a lot of really good players on that team. But when I had heard how what was brewing out there, and, you know, they got a running back, they got a pass rusher, you kind of go down the list. And then when I got to know Joe and saw how he ticked and how he processed things, and just the level of confidence he had in not just his game, but his approach to the game, and the writing was on the wall and for me. And so to go from the conversations that we had last offseason, and then to go through the goal setting process, and then to build up to the season, and then to get to watch last season unfold, you know, each week, kind of everybody just kind of like waiting for these guys to come back to earth and, you know, and finally lose a game and not play that great. And it just never happened. To then the finish of it and the Heisman, it was just a really, really fun journey for me to be on, and to be helpful on, and then to get the experience to be able to help the next crop of guys who go through, you know, similar things to what Joe just went through.
The Rams, Jared Goff was the top pick in 2016. I know you've worked with him. Were you not at the time?
No, so I had worked with him in college and a little bit leading up to the draft. And yeah, you know, there's a lot of people that do what I do, and I don't pretend to be the best quarterback coach in the country. For certain guys, I'm the best. I'm the best at helping guys with certain things. And so there's some guys that are really good on the biomechanics side, and they really use a lot of data to help guys get the most efficient throwing motions. There's other guys who are from different backgrounds as me, and so they can really speak to guys from different backgrounds. And so there's a lot of different situations. Some guys just live on the East Coast and don't want to train anywhere else. Jared's been a guy that, yeah, I've stayed connected with and stayed buddies with, and he trains with somebody who helps him with very specific needs related to what he has.
You've also worked with the Redskins' Kyle Allen. He got his NFL start as a free agent. You've talked about you getting just as much satisfaction from that as maybe you did from the experience with Burrow.
Yeah, Kyle was just so unique. I had met him. He was a junior in high school. I was playing for the Bears at the time. And we met in an Elite 11 regional that I was running out in Chicago. And, connected with him right away. It's funny. I told my wife at the time, I was like, she was asking me, how'd your day go? And it's not like when it comes to the kids coaching camps, I sit here and rattle off everything that happened at the kids camp. But I did mention something to her where I said, yeah, the kid that won it today was, it was really weird. This kid totally reminds me of me. And I had never said that before. I don't even know if I've said it since, but I just kind of said something along the lines. I met this kid, and it's like, he's like a younger me. It's crazy. Except he's like awesome at football, because he was a big time recruit. And I was not. I had one offer at the time coming out of high school. And so, anyways, I remember saying that about him. And so that's just kind of played out. Very, very close with Kyle. And so when it came time for the draft, I was training him and Josh Allen and Sam Darnold, the three of them together. They were living in a house. They had all been college counselors at one of my camps before. So they had met, and three really similar personalities. They're all cool dudes. They all get along great. They've since become like best friends. And I just remember the whole time I was training Sam Darnold and Josh Allen, that whole draft training process, all the hype, all the media was centered around who's going to go number one to Cleveland, Josh or Sam. Baker wasn't part of that equation until about 3 or 4 days before the draft. They had kept that under the lid. It was a shock even, to us the day of the draft. So that whole draft training was who's going one, Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And the whole time, and I said this in the media doing interviews at the time, I go, listen, there's a third guy here too, and I don't know that he's not better than these guys. And they said the same thing. And so to watch that play out, where he only had one coach come to his pro day at Houston, and that was Scott Turner, who at the time was the quarterback coach for the Carolina Panthers. His dad, Norv Turner, a very close friend of mine. And he had a great pro day, just as I told them he would. He had a really weird career. He got benched at two schools, if you look at it on the surface. But if you understand what happened, he got screwed over twice in very unique ways that no one nationally or outside of his family really understood. And so my ability to share that with the right people in the NFL, and it ends up becoming inside information if no one else is going to look at it. And I called everybody, but only a couple teams, really did the homework. Carolina was one. Scott Turner came to his pro day, and then he worked him out privately. They did not draft him, but they took him as an undrafted free agent. Injuries happened in front of him, and when Kyle got his shot, he went in his first year, 2 years ago. He went in week 17 and took over and in a game, and went into New Orleans and beat them. And I think he had around 300 yards passing. He completed about 65% of his passes. He had three touchdowns. And this was his first shot, really, with no reps. But it was week 17. New Orleans was the number one seed. They had they rested some of their starters. And so it was one of those things where people said, oh, well, he did that. He didn't do that against their starters. Like, that matters. Like, the backups aren't playing hard. And then the next year, which was this past season, Cam gets hurt. Kyle goes in. And kind of caught on fire, really. Did some things that no undrafted rookie free agent quarterback had ever done before. And was kind of playing out of his mind for a dozen weeks, and Carolina Panthers picked high for a reason, and so they were depleted at enough positions where they just kind of ended up getting beat towards the end of the year. People ran the ball on them. They couldn't, you know, just other than Christian McCaffrey, they had a hard time, and the coaching staff got fired, and Kyle got benched at the end of the year. Again, that's what it looked like from the outside. From the inside, it was a new owner in the Carolina Panthers wanting to see what he's got on the field, because as they clearly since then have completely shaken up their roster. And when the coaching staff that left there went to the Washington Redskins, the first transaction they made was they went and brought in Kyle Allen. And that guy, Scott Turner, is now the offensive coordinator for the Redskins. And I would say Kyle's in position A to take over the not just the job for the year of the Washington, but I think he's going to take over and love going on the record on stuff like this. He's the future of the Washington Redskins.
Blake Bortles, Miner fans will remember him from his time at UCF. Wasn't he actually the first quarterback you worked with to be drafted?
Yeah, he was. I was playing for the Bears, and somebody had approached me from a company at the time called Athletes Performance Institute. Now it's called Exos, EXOS. They have five locations around the country, and they train a lot of the top athletes and Olympians. And somebody from the headquarters had approached me about helping them, you know, kind of my name had come up in coaching circles, and but I was still playing. And so somebody had approached me about doing draft training and training their quarterbacks. And, you know, I did my draft training with my high school coach, so I didn't really have a picture of what that looked like. And so, you know, they had said, kind of went through what I would do, and I was still playing at the time. So I said, all right, so pay me a little bit of money, and then I'll train here for free, and I'll eat here for free. They have a chef. It sounds like a pretty good deal. I got to be working out every day anyways. And they said, all right, so then we'll give you up to four quarterbacks. And, you know, if it's a guy who's already coming, then we'll introduce you. And if it's a guy who's going to come here and evaluate us, then we'd like for you to kind of set a meeting and share what you're going to do. Well, I had business experience too, so they weren't expecting me to put together a deck and put them through a presentation. But, you know, they came in one day. I was already begun training a few athletes, and they had said, hey, this kid from Central Florida is coming, and he's supposed to be a first-round pick. Well, again, I was playing at the time, right? And when you're in the NFL, you don't watch college football. It's the last thing you do. You may on Saturday night in your hotel room watch, like, the late night SEC game. But think about it. If it's a home game, we're at work on Saturday until 2. And if it's an away game, we're done at noon. We get on a plane and you fly to where you're going. You ride on a bus to the hotel, and then you have meetings. So it's not like you can sit around on Saturday and watch football. So I literally had never heard of the kid. And they said, no, well, he went on a run. UCF, they went to the, you know, I think they went to the Fiesta Bowl or something. It's like, I didn't watch the Fiesta Bowl. So it was one of those deals. I'd never heard of him. And so what was cool is that kid, everyone was pitching him. And I said, look, I'm playing right now, but here's what I'd do if I were you, and I'll help you do it. And you know, I was saying you're supposed to be a first round pick. I have no idea, but either way, I'll get you ready to play. And then out of nowhere, he went third overall, and I fell in love with the process and, you know, the role that I could play in these guys' lives, and have been doing it ever since.
You know, your cred, though, you got to develop some cred to work with the elite talents that you do. How much of it was your time as an NFL player? How much of it was something else?
Well, I think it's becoming less and less what I did as an NFL player. I definitely think because I've lived that, I can certainly speak into some things, but I just think I have one of the most unique perspectives on the game out of anybody I've met. And that is that I know exactly kind of what it's like to be the number one pick in the draft and to win the Heisman and to be the highest paid player in the history of the NFL. I know what that's like because my brother was that, and we're 4 years apart and we're best friends. And, you know, and then when I got to the league and I played in college and then I got to the league, I can relate to a lot of the things. So I could kind of be that person that he would share things with and bounce things off of. And so really for a guy who's never won a Heisman, been a number one pick and never been all the things my brother has been, for a guy who's never been those things, I know about as much of what it was like for him as possible. right? And then I also, I had one offer. I got cut, and sixth round pick. I got cut right away. I signed an arena deal. I signed a United Football League deal with the Sacramento Mountain Lions at one point. I've been bounced off practice squads. I've been cut, you know, multiple times, five or six times. So I know what it's like, as much as I can without being that person, to be my brother, just from being so close to him the whole way through it. And I also know what it's like to be me and barely make it to a scholarship, to a school. I didn't love UTEP when I got there. Sure did when I left. You were there for every phase of it, Teich.
Yep.
To go through that, you know, and then just all of it. And so for me, I know both sides of the spectrum. And then since then, I've been around really good players, really bad players, really cool guys, really lame guys, like great coaches, terrible coaches. So, and you just add in all that experience. And the last piece is, you know, this Elite 11 deal where the top going to be senior, top rising senior high school quarterbacks go to every year has been around for 23 years. And I've been a part of every single one of them for 23 years now.
Yeah.
And so that's coaching a lot of people over time. And so, yeah, I think the fact that I used to play is helpful, but I think it's my perspective and the fact that my 10,000 hours of coaching happened a long, long time ago.
When you start working with someone new at this point, generally speaking, do they come to you based on word of mouth, or is it their representatives that reach out to you? How does that work?
Yeah, it's a little combo. So I run camps called QB Summits, and a lot of times I always have college counselors come. And so some cases with Joe Burrow, with Josh Allen, I get connected to the guy somehow, whether his coach gives me his number or gives him my number or you know, friend of a friend. And they'll reach out or we'll connect, and I'll just say, hey, look, just come as a counselor to a camp, get a feel for how I coach and what I believe, do the same thing. I don't necessarily want to train guys just because they're top picks. It's been a lot of top picks that I wasn't interested in working with. And there's been a lot of, every year I've trained somebody who's gone undrafted. And so I had one go undrafted this year, Steven Montez. And so, it's, for me, it's not about training the top picks. It's the guys that I think I can help the most. And so I've got to look into the window a little bit to see that's there, and they've got to spend some time with me in most cases. What I haven't done is just train somebody for the draft sight unseen. So one group of it is that. Another group is guys I meet, you know, when they're younger at the Elite 11 or, you know, some of my high school kids that I've been working with for a long time, they're now kind of getting to the point where they're going to go to the NFL the next few years. And then other guys like Patrick Mahomes, it's their coach just saying, hey, I want you to work with this guy. And in that case, Cliff Kingsbury reached out to me, Patrick's sophomore year, and said, hey, I want you to, you know, mind working with this kid.
When you begin to work with someone, where do you start?
I like to try and figure out a diagnosis of kind of what's going on. I won't name him, but there's a prominent college player that I literally today, first time we got on the field together. And so I just went through this process, potential high pick in the next 2 years. And so I like to do a kind of a diagnosis and then come up with a prescription together. But I really evaluate guys and really ultimately, aside from just evaluating them, my job is to help them become triple threats. And that is really, how are they in three categories: physically, mentally, and emotionally. And physically does not just, you know, six pack or can you throw it far? There's a lot of pieces to the physical side from a mechanics standpoint, their nutrition, how they develop their body, how they maintain their body. So there's a lot of stuff there where you can kind of see where they're at. And then on the mental, it's three things: how well do they understand the offense, how well do they understand defense, and then how well do they understand the game itself. And then the other one is the emotional side: confidence, how do they communicate, how do they deal with success and adversity. A lot of times just their story is part of that, right? Is this somebody who really is trying to leverage what he's doing to impact the community that he lives in? Is this not? So how do they, if they say, I'd love to be that guy, how do I do it? So I kind of go through a screening of physically, mentally, emotionally, where are they? And then I'm just big on isolating one or two things to work on at a time and just stack good days and stack productivity. I believe that, success is far more behavior based than it is talent based. Successful people get behind successful behaviors. And success also leaves clues, right? Every person who's done an incredible thing, for the most part, they've written a book, right? Worst case scenario, hopped on a podcast and answered questions like this. And so if that's the case and success leaves clues, and we can really actually, if you're proactive, you can really take things from people. So if somebody needs to get better on the physical side, they need more velocity. On the mental side, they need to understand defense better. And on the emotional side, they need to learn how to generate confidence. Then I look at it and I go, you know, those three things, well, there's plenty of opportunities to learn how to do that. I can help you with some of them, and there's plenty of ways to be helped on that. And so it's less about a guy coming and training with me every day and more about me prescribing the right things to guys and doing a proper diagnosis so we can get on the same page about how they can reach their potential.
You just mentioned, and I've heard you speak a great deal about confidence and maturity as the top two attributes a good quarterback must have. You really believe that, don't you?
I do. Confidence is the root. It's kind of what leads to everything else in my mind. For example, if a quarterback goes out in an off season and throws more than any other quarterback and improves as if this is a thing and improves more than any other quarterback did that off season and learns more than anybody in the country learned that year, right? When they start that season, that quarterback who had the greatest off season in the history of football, he doesn't start off up 7 because of that. Like, all that work literally does nothing for the quarterback. Now, I definitely don't think that you shouldn't go and do those things and strive for that. But what I do believe is that all the work that that quarterback did, all it did was give him the confidence in his ability to go and do that on the field. And so repetition, strength, gains, improvement, these advancements in your learning, all of those things, they don't really actually guarantee you more touchdowns. They give you the confidence in your ability to do those things so that ultimately the byproduct is you can throw more touchdowns. So all of the work is super important, but to do that work and not address confidence and how that confidence is going to allow you to go and do those things is just a disconnect, right? That, I mean, it's just, you know, swapping out the engine on your car. The problem is your transmission. You know what I mean? Like, the engine works great and the car looks great, but it's still not going to run. And so it's the confidence is such an integral part of a player reaching his potential. And, you know, there's a couple types of confidence. There's reactionary confidence when a player is, I'd say it like this, reactionary confidence is when you are completely dependent on your environment. So everybody is saying you're the man, you start to believe that. Everybody's saying, you know, boo, you suck, and you start to wonder if they're right. I've absolutely been guilty of this. For minor fans who are listening to this, I did not learn how to play with confidence until my third year in the NFL. I was playing with reactionary confidence. When times were good, I thought I was doing well. And you've seen it, Teich. When things were not going well, I did not have any foundation or structure to be able to get it back on the other side. So reactionary confidence, I was guilty of it for the majority of my career, is one type of confidence. So it's very misleading. The other type of confidence is self-generated confidence. Now, that is independent of the environment. Everybody's booing and saying you're the worst. It's irrelevant to you. Everybody's saying you're the man and you're the best. They may be right, but that has no bearing on what I think about what I'm going to do. It just is unwavering. It's self-generated. It does not need anything outside of it. And so I think confidence is a muscle that you can develop and grow and train. And I try and first let guys, you know, come together and figure out, listen, man, you have completely reactionary confidence, and here's how this is dangerous. You're transitioning, or you have self-generated confidence, and here's how you're going to make this unwavering to where no matter what strikes it, it's unshakable.
You talk about the necessity for quarterbacks to have good study habits and own, not just know their playbook. What is the difference there?
I would say, like the way you say your name, right? So my name is Jordan William Palmer, and there's no scenario where I'm going to screw that up and say William, we just don't screw that up, right? Your birthday, your social security number. You don't even have to think about answering it. And I've just been around guys where the playbook can become that. It's an extension of their language. They you say a word, they see a picture. Say the name of a protection, they see the picture. And I just think that there's ways to develop that. I've done it with at every age, high school, college, and pros, helping guys really own their playbooks. And there's a process for how you learn a playbook. I created it as I learned 7 systems in the NFL. And so I tested it myself and then have built off of it the last few years. And it's become one of those things where it's for a lot of guys, it's one of the biggest ways I can help them.
Does knowing the playbook give quarterbacks the ability to process information quickly and effectively as they must?
Yeah, I look at it like this. Pre-snap, every quarterback has X amount of mental bars of energy. A coach explained it to me this way. Now, really smart guys have more mental bars than really dumb guys. Okay, but we all have so many. And so whatever you spend of those mental bars of energy before the snap, thinking about things that had you studied them, you wouldn't need to, then that's a waste, right? So if you're breaking the huddle going, which side is Z on? Well, that is something that could have been addressed before you broke the huddle. So you are going to be spending mental bars of energy thinking about that instead of getting your eyes on the defense. And every level, there's different variations of that. But, you know, the more time you have to prepare and the better coaching you have and the better study habits you have, the more time you get to think about what's in front of you and not what is supposed to be getting lined up or what play is supposed to be being ran.
I'm sure you'd agree that quarterbacking has changed over the last decade or so, from taking a snap from under center and standing in the pocket to, you know, so many shotgun snaps now, the ability to move around, extend plays. Discuss that and how, if at all, it's changed what you do.
Yeah, I think the future of the quarterback's position is the quarterback's ability to create time and space. Sometimes that's running around and making somebody miss, and like Lamar Jackson, and sometimes that's hitching up in the pocket or moving to their left 2 or 3 steps like Brady and Breeze. And so there's variations and there's different levels to it. Part of it is feel and part of it is athleticism. And the other part of it is just sound mechanics, getting used to moving the same way every single time. And so the game is moving that way. More kids are throwing balls as high school kids and college kids and getting more completions. O-linemen are growing up pass blocking more than run blocking. And so it's just been a movement towards that. And I'm all for it. I think it makes the game more enjoyable and more competitive.
Let's get your thoughts on some of the guys you do work with or have worked with. You mentioned earlier Patrick Mahomes. Do any of the amazing things that he does surprise you?
Yeah, a lot surprises me about Patrick. Just the way he continues to make it look different, but the result is the same. For most guys, and I'll say most, I'm saying most of the best ones. So not most of everybody, but most of like a small group, the way that they can put the ball in the same place completely depends on their ability to have consistent mechanics. And with Patrick, just doesn't. He can kind of throw it from a lot of different angles and the result is the same. And that surprises me because I don't understand really how it happens outside of just incredible off the charts feel. The other thing about Patrick is that most people know and celebrate him for how strong his arm is, and he's got this huge arm. But I think the best part of his passing game is his quick release and touch. So for a guy to be celebrated for having the strongest arm in the league, and for me to celebrate him for having arguably the best touch and feel on the short and mid-range throws, I think speaks to just how incredible he is.
What about Deshaun Watson?
Well, the thing about Deshaun has always been what's between his ears and what's inside his chest. The two things with him, and he can throw it great. He's fast. He's all those things. But Deshaun is among one of the most studious, and just the level at which his study habits are, consistency. One of the most studious quarterbacks I've ever been around. That includes my playing career. Deshaun in third grade was on honor roll. He graduated from Clemson in less than 3 years on the dean's list and never missed a semester not on honor roll or dean's list. Graduated with a 3.8. He's incredibly intelligent, high-functioning, great study habits. Won't close the book until he understands it type learner. It's a competitive learner. Then between what's in his chest is adversity that he went through as a little boy. You know, never met his dad and mom got cancer. He's living with his aunt. He's working three jobs in high school while he's on honor roll, Mr. Basketball, Mr. Football in Georgia, just the still donating time in the community. Just the way like his never quit, never give up, the way he played Bama back to back years is really the way that he plays every game. And so he's just an elite, elite competitor. All the football stuff's cool too, but those two things are definitely unique.
Drew Lock, I'm sure you'd agree, he took the NFL by storm the second half of last season. What about him?
Well, he's about to become a household name. I've felt that way. I sat in the green room with him, the last draft, the whole first round when his name didn't get called. That's a long night. And the chip that put on his shoulder was just incredible. So by the time that gave him the opportunity to go last year, I think he went 4-1. His only loss was to Kansas City. You know, but they were kind of limited and they weren't that great on D and they didn't really have ton of help at receiver. You know, they traded Emmanuel Sanders and he's about to become a household name, one, because of what he's capable of, and two, because of the offseason that the Broncos just had, adding Jerry Jeudy, KJ Hamler, Melvin Gordon, and they got Joe Burrow, center from LSU, Quisenberry. So the offseason that they just had, free agency, they added AJ Bouye, one of the best young corners in the league. Denver is about to be a force, and they're such a classic, timeless team. With a quarterback like Drew and his personality, that it's the more he starts winning, the more his personality is going to come out. He's actually going to be one of the most talked about, funny, charismatic, just bigger than life personalities. He's going to be one of the biggest ones in the league, if not the biggest one in the league here soon.
He and Patrick are going to have some epic duels, don't you suppose?
It's going to be great. And they're buddies, and Drew's born and raised in Kansas City. That's the team he's always wanted to play for. And so now he gets to play him twice a year.
All right. You mentioned Jarrett Stidham earlier. He's going to have an opportunity to compete for the Patriots job. I would imagine as much as anything else, having to deal just with following Tom Brady, how do you think he's going to handle that?
I think he's going to take this thing in stride. They're pretty limited in terms of their weaponry on offense, but you know, Jarrett's the kind of kid who can throw the balls right up there with anybody in the league in terms of his anticipation, touch, his ability to spin it. Very underrated passer, very underrated athlete. But he's another guy who went through a lot at a young age and really grew up and had a lot of adversity. And so that stuff, it hardens you like anything in life. And so I think he knows that this is the biggest opportunity that I think any quarterback could get. And so I know he's doing everything he can to put himself in a position to go get it. And I think that he's the future of the New England Patriots.
You also touched on Steven Montez earlier, of course, El Paso and a graduate of Del Valle High School. He's earned a free agent chance with the Redskins. You've worked with him. What have you done for him? What do you see as his chances?
Well, he's in a great spot. Ironically, I started my career with the Redskins and, you know, I was drafted in the sixth round by the Redskins. And when I was drafted, it was the only team where my agent said, well, I know that this team won't take a quarterback. And the reason that he said it is because they had three guys fresh under contract. So there was essentially no point in drafting a quarterback. Now, I did not play well when I got there, but it wouldn't have mattered. That is not the situation that Steven's gone into. Steven's going into a really good situation with the Redskins. When I came out, it would have been better for me to go undrafted to the New Orleans Saints. I was talking to Sean Payton that day and he's saying, hey, if you don't get drafted, we want to take you as an undrafted free agent. And so I was kind of coming around to the idea, and then the Redskins took me and I couldn't go. So what ended up happening is a different quarterback, Tyler Palko, went there and played 4 years. It was a better situation. So there's some teams that I thought might draft Steven turns out the Redskins is the best situation to go to. You got Kyle Allen, who in my opinion is going to beat out Dwayne Haskins this year. When he does, they'll probably trade Dwayne. And the only other quarterback you have is Alex Smith, which we'll see if he's able to come back from this injury. And in that room, you've got Ken Zampezi, who's the quarterback coach that I played for with the Bengals, who's the guy that I learned the most NFL football from. And so for Steven to sit this year with Alex Smith in the room, who's a professor at MIT as far as football is concerned, Kyle Allen, who I would say almost just a younger version of the same thing, and one of the best quarterback coaches in the NFL, if not the best quarterback coach in the NFL, those three elements and an opportunity to compete this year, but an evolving quarterback room, which you don't want to go into as a quarterback room that's set. You want to go into one that's evolving, because if you're really good, they'll create a space for you. So I really like the situation that he's in. You know, Steven can make every throw, way more athletic than, at least than what I, what NFL coaches thought he was going to be, when they saw him move and, when he really break down his tape, very, very good athlete. And he's just a smart, hardworking dude. He's blue collar. And he's been a blast to be around, and it's been awesome to get to know his little brother, get to know his dad a little bit. I think Steven's going to make it in this league, and he's going to play. Just coming out of a weird situation in Colorado.
Yeah, well, that's good news. We're all rooting for Steven and his success, certainly. Jordan, I'm going to ask you to do something now and kind of put you on the spot. We didn't talk about this in advance, so kind of be interesting to see what you come up with here. If I asked you to construct the ideal, the perfect, the best quarterback of all time, using the individual skills and traits from different quarterbacks, both past and present, whose attributes would you utilize to do that?
Oh, man. All right.
That's a tough one.
Yeah. I think arm strength, I'd take Josh Allen. I think just the ability to move in the pocket, I'd take. Oh, you're talking about I can take any quarterback.
Yeah, anyone you want. Yeah.
Man, ability to move around in the pocket. Like the feel. I think Tony Romo had some of the best just feel, eyes in the back of his head, creating time and space. I'd take Aaron Rodgers' quick release. I'd take the deep ball of my brother. He really, really never missed deep balls down the field. It was incredible. I mean, if you can get him out on the perimeter and run around like Lamar, that would be fun. I think the ideal size of these guys who's got the best setup. I'd probably take my brother on that in terms of just the frame, the size, and then take the study habits and the attention to detail of Drew Brees. That one's actually a landslide. The way that he processes and goes about things, I think, is very unique. I don't know. I know he's young in the league, and not a lot of people, you know, he hasn't played that long, and we'll see how his career goes, but the mentality, when it all comes down to this moment right now, I would actually take Deshaun Watson over. Yeah, like this moment, big moment, I'd actually take him over anybody, even though he's young and hasn't won a Super Bowl yet. So I don't know if that's enough attributes, but there's a handful of guys, and can really only speak to the guys that I've been around.
All right. Now, okay, then that's fair, certainly. But I didn't hear Brady's name in any of that, and yet he's considered to be the best quarterback of all time. That's interesting.
Yeah. I'm a big Brady fan. I love it. It's his coach too. I am fascinated to watch Brady away from Belichick. I can't wait. Just to see what they both do.
Yeah.
It's just impossible to separate the two. And I think that's what's so impressive, is that I actually wouldn't use any of Tom Brady's traits over other people's, and yet he's the best.
Yeah.
So it's his combination. It's an aggregate of all of those different things that's put him in a situation to be where he is.
Yeah, so interesting. Jordan, I know that you enjoy and you're happy with what you're doing now. Can you see yourself at some point coaching high school, collegiate, or pro football?
I don't know. I'm certainly not planning it. I don't have a 10-year plan or 5-year plan. I'm in the process of launching something called QB Summit Digital, which is going to be a platform, everything out of my head and onto the screen, everything that I believe physically, mentally, emotionally, every drill, every concept, the stuff that I do in camps, stuff that I do with NFL and college guys. It's the perfect time with every kid and every parent learning how to do Zoom. I'm going to have sections on this thing for parents about recruiting, and I'm going to bring in other great parents who've done an awesome job of raising their kids to sit on panels and speak via Zoom to parents. I actually be able to help the entire family. But for me, that's my focus right now. In terms of high school and college or pro, I don't plan on moving at all. I don't know that I want to step into that lifestyle right now with young kids, and certainly not a knock on the guys who do it. I love football as much as anybody. But I've been able to build something really cool and unique in my hometown, and get a chance to work with guys from 10 years old to 10-year vets and everything in between. And I don't get fired, and I haven't lost any games, and I don't have to move. And so for me, that's what makes the most sense right now. And certainly I'm open to anything down the road. But I'm really just kind of thinking about things a few years in advance.
You know, ever since I've known you, your communication skills have been just outstanding. And I've seen a lot of the media things you've done this fall or this past fall for the first time. I think you were doing the weekly game analysis for the Fox networks. How did that go? How did you enjoy it? What did you find most challenging?
Well, I loved that. I stepped into broadcasting. You know, I hired an agent and started saying yes to everything and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And is it NFL studio? Is it college studio? Is it podcast? Is it radio? And so what I've narrowed it down to, based off of what I enjoy doing and what I think that I could get good at with a lot of work, is calling games, college games in particular. I loved it. I was supposed to do 2. I ended up doing 9. You know, we'll see what happens this season with the pandemic. But if given the opportunity, yeah, I'm going to, I really, really enjoy calling games. It's a half combination. It's a combination of 2 things. 1, preparation, and 2, freestyling in the moment and reacting to what's happening. And to me, that's become the closest thing to playing, which that's what quarterback is. It's a combination of preparation and figured out on the fly. And so I enjoy that. I also do radio on Sundays on Sirius on the NFL channel. And I do a show with Zig Farkassi, and I've really enjoyed that too. But I'm doing it a little different. I'm really just kind of doing a deep dive on a couple of things that are just really interesting to me. Less about, you know, talking about current events, and more about, you know, does everybody realize what's happening in New Orleans with Drew Brees and how he's going to, the way he's going to finish off his career here, and why I believe that. And so it's been, you know, as an example, so we've been doing really deep dives on different stories. So, yeah, I've enjoyed radio and I've enjoyed TV. And for me, the digital landscape is wide open in terms of teaching quarterbacks, you know, this game, and not just in America too. I'm set up to really help in a couple other countries as I continue to grow Summit internationally.
Yeah, I think it was just a matter of time before you got into the media stuff. Let's go to Carson. He was at USC while you were in high school, began in the NFL during your time at UTEP, and then you got to be his backup with the Bengals for a couple of years. That had to be just the thrill of the lifetime.
Yeah, it's as cool as it gets. I mean, that job by itself is awesome, and then loved living in Cincinnati, and it was a great phase of our lives. And, you know, his wife during that phase got pregnant and had twins, you know, so to be just around your brother and his kids in that phase. And we were also good a couple of those years. So in every aspect of it, that was in terms of career, that was an absolute best case scenario. And just a time we will just always look back on and cherish.
I know he's been retired for a couple of years now. He and his family are up in Idaho. How are they doing, and what's he up to?
You know, they're kind of weathering the storm right now, and he's got 4 kids, and yeah, they're just kind of sorting out life after football. And he's got a lot of other interests. I know he does a lot of stuff in business and on the real estate side of things. And so he's got his interests, and with four kids, they're busy, and he's doing great. He hasn't thought twice or, you know, looked back and had any regrets about anything in his career.
Going back to your formative days, Jordan, as a quarterback, who are the other quarterbacks that you looked up to back in the day and maybe modeled yourself after?
First was definitely my brother. I mean, it was a perfect example. He was 4.5 years older than me. Matt Leinart's from my area. He was 2 years older than me. He was a guy that, you know, I just had watched all of his success right in front of me. Rob Johnson was my high school coach's youngest son. He played 11 years, I think, in the league. He was a handful of years older than Carson. I was a little ball boy when I was a kid going to SC practices, spring ball practices, and watching them. And, you know, being in Southern California, we had so many different we had so many, you know, guys around here and so many things to be fans of. And really, as I got to the league, Philip Rivers has always been a guy I still don't understand how the ball comes out of his hand and how it goes exactly where he was aiming every single time, but didn't model my throwing motion after him. I loved his passion, the way he's played the game. And then, you know, from once I got into the league, then I was just influenced by so many different people that nobody even sticks out. But yeah, I was blessed to have a lot of guys older than me that I could kind of watch and learn from.
We've covered a lot of ground, and yet we haven't touched on your time here at UTEP as a minor. So let's do that now. Given your physical stature and your attributes, it's amazing to me that UTEP, as you say, was your only offer coming out of high school. What were your capabilities back then, as you remember them?
Well, it's funny. I don't remember how I looked. You know what I mean? Like, I definitely remember a bunch of stuff from college, but I can't look at myself like I'm in the third person and then compare myself to somebody. Even if I watch the tape, it's weird. My senior year in high school, we went 14-0. We were the best team in the state, and my running back had a bunch of touchdowns every game. And so I got yanked at halftime, even though I'd only throw the ball 8, 10, 12 times. So I had a very unproductive. Yeah, I didn't have great stats my senior year. My junior year, I played a different position. I played receiver and a little bit of safety because the starting quarterback, my junior year, he was a senior. He was committed to go to SC. And the only reason people hadn't heard of him is they took Matt Leinart that year and they took a guy named Billy Hart. And so everyone knows who Matt Leinart is. But I didn't play my senior year. And so you kind of miss all the offer season. And then you got your senior year. And it was really just Coach Ron Hudson, who was the O-line coach at the time, who I'm still very close with, who was the one who saw something in me and stood on the table for me and, and it ultimately got me there and kept me, you know, fired up and about coming out there. And so, I was certainly big enough and, you know, could run around a little bit, but, I think I was probably middle of the pack. You know, I didn't have any physical unique traits, meaning just something that no one else had. I just think I was a combination of a bunch of pretty good things. And as I said earlier, you know, the way that I kind of tapped into my confidence was not, it's not the way that I train guys to do it. It's actually really self-destructive. And so I had high highs and low lows, from a confidence standpoint, which is why you look at what if for those minor fans who lived through those days, I threw a ton of touchdowns and a ton of interceptions.
Yeah.
And that is not because I missed. It's not because I missed and threw the pick and I made a good throw on the touchdowns. It was all psychological. And so, it was, you know, I can remember specifically the SMU game. All we had to do was go to SMU, beat them. They were not very good at the time. Needed to go there, beat them. And then we would have gone to, I believe, the WAC championship at the time. Maybe Conference USA championship.
Yeah. Yep.
And I had 3 or 4 interceptions and a fumble or two. It was something crazy. I single-handedly lost that game for us. And it had nothing to do with how I was throwing. It had nothing to do with, it's not that I didn't know the playbook or I wasn't sure. They fooled me on defense. It was like I was 20 years old. I had no idea what to do with hype and expectations. I'd never had them before. I got inside my own head and I made a couple catastrophic decisions. And so at the time, that was devastating to me. I remember that day more than any day of my college career. But I know exactly why now. Like, I can help guys out of this now. It's all how you talk to yourself, you know, and it's having a foundation to be able to tap into confidence. And so for me, like, I don't know how I was physically as a player, but I know how I was mentally as a player. And so my answer is not very good. I was not very good. I wouldn't take a quarterback who's that wishy-washy mentally. Now, I had great players around me, Johnny Lee Higgins and Chris Morrow and Chris Francis, and I had all these, you know, these Jonas Kraft, these awesome players, Howard Jackson. And so when things were good, we were awesome. And then when things were bad, we weren't very good. And so everything kind of flowed through me, you know, when I was there, in terms of how good or bad we were going to be. I was either going to limit us or I was going to help us get there. And so hopefully there's some fans that are listening to this right now that are going, oh, that makes sense. I'm not so mad at him anymore. but I'm sure that resonates with you.
Did you consider going the JUCO route or walking on somewhere rather than taking the only offer you had at a place that you admit you didn't care for when you first got here?
Yeah, if it wasn't for Ron Hudson and Gary Nord, I definitely would have gone to walked on at Arizona State or something like that. And then ultimately probably not ever made it. So lots of those guys, but and Coach Nate Boss too. But for me, just early on, or coming out of high school, yeah, that was my only offer. I wanted to go to Boise. Dan Hawkins was recruiting me. I told him, look, I'm not going to gray shirt. Fresno State had offered me a gray shirt. We got to sit out that first year and then sit out another year. I told Boise, I'm not going to gray shirt. And I got all the way down to my recruiting trip when they said, because they had offered me and fired up. I was coming out to commit. And they said, well, no, we're going to gray shirt you. I was like, what? They took Jared Zabransky over me and the career that he had. And so I believed Dan Hawkins at the time. They weren't anything. He was telling me what they were going to do there. And so I was all in. I wanted to be the guy that was going to turn that place around. And when they, you know, pulled it out for me at last second, it was Ron Hudson and Gary Nord who kind of kept me, you know, excited about going to a place where people actually wanted me, because nowhere else did. They got me there, and then it was just the city and the people and the camaraderie and the team and people like you. And as you know, I very quickly that flipped for me, and I loved living in El Paso and being a minor.
You start six times as a redshirt freshman the next year, sharing the job largely with Orlando Cruz. The Miners won twice. What are your memories of the first season you played in?
I got one funny story. I think we were playing San Diego State, and we had an option. Minor fans may not remember this. I was running the option with Gary Nord in the offense, freeze option, and I'm running like a 4.9. And so I remember I'm running option versus San Diego State, and two guys on defense go the wrong way. And so when I cross the line of scrimmage, there is nothing in front of me. And I ran for, I don't know, 20 or 30 yards or something like that. And it was when Orlando was starting the game, and then I'd come in. The next week we play at Louisville, and Orlando starts the game, and I come in, and I'll never forget. The middle linebacker says, number five's in. Watch option. Watch option. And what I tell you, a slow quarterback hearing that, hearing the defense go, basically sound the alarm, this guy might run on us. I just honestly, like, I it's one of the most vivid memories I have of my playing career, period.
Oh, man, that's funny. Coach Nord is let go after the season. When that happened, what was your reaction?
Well, you know, I'm a kid, and so my dad always had a stable job. I'd never been around that before. And I had a lot of love and respect for Gary and his family, to his son, his daughter, his wife. I was very close. He brought me there. And so I was really, really sad and really bummed for him. I also watched 2 years of us just not be that competitive. I didn't know what to compare it to, but it's one of those things where you go, okay, well, let's see what happens. And we weren't the family where we were looking at transferring or trying to make sure that the right coach came in. It was still a competition. I wasn't even the clear-cut guy yet. And so when Mike Price got the job, and then you start doing research and you're going, whoa, this is crazy. That was everything that had happened with Alabama was really a year old. So we still kind of on your mind, even though I didn't even know anything about Alabama, the school, it wasn't even a school I was paying attention to. And so just that whole process of then him coming there and then meeting his two sons, Aaron and Eric, and then, just learning more about him and they, you know, they made it a competition. They didn't announce, I think, the starter. I don't think he told me until training camp. And so to have to compete with Orlando Cruz and Omar Duarte, go through that process, which was great for me. I'd never really had a competition before. And where it's set up, they're saying, hey, the best guy is going to play. Here's a ball. I'd never been in that situation. That was a great experience for me because I was the rest of my career after college. But yeah, Mike coming in, the excitement, just different leaders emerging. Robert Rodriguez stepping up as a huge leader on defense, and Godwin Akinduro stepping up, Thomas Howard on offense. Johnny Lee and I started really kind of, you know, leading that team. And but with a bunch of really awesome Josh House, a bunch of really great linemen, you know, James Riley, Robbie Felix, these young guys started playing, and you just kind of started to see things turn. I think it was just a different belief system. And so for me to watch a one-win team transition into what, you know, we became, was one of my favorite parts of the college.
Yeah, the Miners won 8 games in 2004, played Colorado in the Houston Bowl game. And I've said, Jordan, and I'm sure you'd agree, that day was so much fun playing in an NFL stadium, Reliance Stadium at the time, as we did. And it was kind of like a celebration of UTEP football.
Yeah, it really was. You know, just it was it felt big. It felt big time. And it felt cool that we could be there and be a part of that. But I also remember just feeling like we belonged there and we belonged in bigger things. And so, yeah, I remember a lot from that day. It was a really fun game. Shootout, Joel Klatt, now my colleague at Fox. I look back on that and I smile.
Yeah, it was a heck of a football game. 2005, your junior year. Miners move from the Western Athletic Conference to Conference USA. You start all 12. The Miners win 8 again and a spot in the GMAC Bowl against Toledo. What do you remember about that season?
Gosh, I can't service them. What's funny is one of my good buddies is Bruce Gradkowski, who I met. He was the quarterback at Toledo. We played against each other, hung out all week doing media stuff. Played with each other, played against each other, and have stayed buddies. But yeah, I remember, you know, that year just we had lost. I think we had lost Robert Rodriguez and some of those guys, right? They were after the Houston Bowl. That was their last year. Ebach. I think they were seniors. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, new guys had needed to step up and lead. And I think we added Tyler Ebell that year. That was my junior year.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was just it was a different type of mentality, and we had a lot more of my class, which was a really big class, stepping up into leadership positions. And I remember losing a couple games that we just absolutely should not have lost, and that one that year really sticks with me in terms of kind of what could have been.
I'm not sure you're aware of this. You're probably only one of two or three quarterbacks ever at UTEP to lead a program to more than one bowl game. I'd say that's pretty special.
Yeah, that was cool. There was just some games. I remember we lost that UAB game. I think I threw a bad pick and we gave up a bad touchdown. That quarterback had guaranteed that they were going to win the game. They were going to come in and beat us. I'll never forget that. I remember his name, played for the Broncos for a little bit, but he guaranteed
victory. Is it Joe Webb?
No. Before that, so he guaranteed victory, and they just figured out. We figured out a way to let them win. We just had a couple of those games, you know, and then that SMU game at the end. It was also, we scored a ton of points and had a lot of fun.
Your senior season, 2006, you throw for a school record nearly 3,600 yards. Miners come up one game short of bowl eligibility. That had to be a disappointment.
Yeah, it really was. We had so many seniors and so many guys that, deserved to kind of go out the right way and put it all together. And so for us to not be able to do that was tough. And I really wanted that at the time. You know, Mike was up for consideration. Mike Price was up for some considerations, in particular Arizona State. I know, well, they ended up hiring a different coach, and that was open. And I thought that would have been awesome. And one of his sons could have taken over as a head coach here. It would have been perfect at the time. We would have been carrying everything right over. And I remember thinking about all these cool scenarios for everybody. And so that year was frustrating to go out that way. We had sellout crowds and thrown a couple game winners and had like awesome times, but I really wanted the city to have another championship. And so for me, that year was really kind of just about that. And so that was a bummer to not be able to bring one back.
You've thrown out quite a few names of your former teammates. Who do you still talk to from time to time? Which of them have become your very best friends?
Well, what's awesome is just through social media, you can like kind of stay connected with a ton of people. And, you know, Aaron King was a deep snapper for the Miners and good friend of mine. And, a guy, crossed paths with a bunch, and I love following and getting the random check-ins from Johnny Lee Higgins, who's just all time classic, him and Chris Morrow, both. And it was cool. I was in the draft, I was at the draft in Dallas a few years ago when it was Darnold and Allen's year. And there's so many guys that are living out in Dallas. It was pretty cool. A bunch of us got together. Robbie Felix, James Riley, Josh House. There's a big group of us got together and kind of just had it was mostly O-linemen too, which was great. But it was awesome to kind of get everybody together and just swap stories and how many kids do you have and what are you doing for a living and all that. And then there's a name that not many Miner fans are going to know, my guy, Dustin Gersh. I love checking in with Cooter. I'm sure you remember
sure.
Gersh.
Sure.
He's the man. So, yeah, it's been awesome. And a couple coaches, and it's been great to see some coaches go on and do other things. And I ran into Brian Natkin in Indianapolis and run into Wes Phillips every year. And so it's been great to stay connected with a lot of different levels.
You know, you've talked a lot about some of the more challenging times. What were the best times you had in El Paso and at UTEP?
I don't know. I mean, I loved my experience from start to finish. The off seasons were great, playing golf, hanging out. I loved kind of being a college student and hanging out with my buddies all the time. I'm not a guy who likes to be by myself a whole lot, and love being around people. And so college was, you know, one of the best periods of my life. And then just some awesome wins. I remember the Texas Tech game. Awesome wins, and we didn't win the Texas Tech game, but I remember some awesome games. Finishing up after a big win and doing the press conference down at the bottom, and then getting in the back of the golf cart and riding back up to the locker room. And I can remember sitting on the back of that golf cart with Johnny Lee or Howard Jackson or whoever it was that, you know, went off that game. And I don't know. Life didn't get much better than that.
Yeah, hard to replicate that stuff, isn't it?
Huh? It is. But in terms of favorite memories from college, that's a tough one, man. I got a lot.
Have you had a chance to get to know Coach Dimmel at all?
Just a little bit. I came out, I think it was this past year. And
yeah.
I've got a chance just to get to know him a little bit and see his program. And you can tell a lot by what people say about their coach. And I heard a lot of really, really awesome things about him.
Well, Jordan, this has been fun, and I'd like to speak on behalf of El Paso, all of El Paso, UTEP, and certainly for all Miner fans as well. We wish you continued success, health, and well-being for you and your family. Thank you for what you've done and continue to do for the city and your university, and thanks for taking the time to do this. We always look forward to seeing you when you're able to visit.
You're the best in the business, man. You were the first guy to really on a consistent basis interview me. You know, I didn't really get interviewed in high school. And always given constructive criticism and feedback because it played a big role in what I'm doing and what I want to do. And I could just pick out a bunch of people from El Paso that have done that, you know, and it's not just coaches and players, it's people in the community as well. And so it's just really kind of helped shape who I want to be and why I work at being that. And so I'd say thank you to you, but thank you to a lot of people who are listening to this, who played a role in that. And I'm just honored to be able to give it away and challenge other young quarterbacks to have a similar greater impact than that.
Thanks again to Jordan Palmer, and hopefully you've enjoyed this chapter of the Picks Up Podcast, a UTEP Athletics production. Stay safe, stay well, Picks Up, and go Miners. I'll talk to you again next time on another edition of the Picks Up Podcast.